Greetings and welcome to MERS Monday, the official podcast of the MERS Political Newsletter. I'm Kyle Mullen, joined by the whole MERS crew here. Samantha Harkins from the Michigan Municipal League will be joining us in just a few minutes. But Jacob was over visiting the president on Friday. Jacob, did you get that one-on-one for the podcast that I was asking for?
Oh, yeah. We got the exclusive interview among the, you know, 60, I don't know, dozens of media people that were there.
You know, so was it everything that you expected it to be? Because the whole office panned the idea of going there, and you basically were the only one who stuck up their hand to volunteer for this thing.
Yeah, I mean, I try to keep my expectations low in terms of the excitement of it. I mean, I just want to say it was a fitting event. I mean, you know, you have the Michigan senator that puts this legislation through that is, you know, arguably the only thing that Congress might do this year. So it was a fitting event to have it at Michigan State with the Senator Debbie Stabenow who led it. So it was cool in that regard. But besides that, I mean, it kind of went according to plan.
Now, did they have you all penned up like we said that they were going to have you do? You had to get there like 2 hours in advance.
Oh, yeah. The security was interesting. You know, they take out your laptop right in front of you, actually look at it, see what's on the screen. I'm not sure what they're looking for. And we were all behind a fence, and every once in a while, a legislator would come over and, you know, feed us some quotes, and then they would go back. So we had the partition right there.
And so Mark Schauer was working the crowd, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
Gary Peters as well? Or
yes.
And then we also had Mike Colton, who was talking with people also.
Yeah, I saw that. I know a couple of people spotted him, and from what I've read, he said he wanted to come because he's the president of the United States, and he should be there, and agriculture is important to his district.
You know, Colton almost got quote of the day, though, for something he said to him live, Craig.
Yeah, it was a great quote. I can't remember it off the top of my head.
It was about chickens.
It was about how there's more chickens in his county than people, and so if they could vote, he probably wouldn't be the representative. It'd probably be a rooster.
Which I said was presumptuous, because a female chicken would be just as qualified to lead as a rooster.
Oh, that's a good point. They could have picked one of their own.
Yeah.
I mean, why would they have, why just the rooster, right? That doesn't make any sense. So Schauer and Peters did show up there. As we were having this conversation before the taping, you guys weren't surprised, but the Republican Party made insinuations that maybe Schauer and Peters would not want to be side by side with the president because the president's rollout of the Affordable Care Act has been bumpy, to be generous, right? But at the end of the day, you can't miss this opportunity, kind of, Jacob.
And, you know, so they have to show up because I think it'd be worse if they didn't. But my argument is the Affordable Care Act is going to be an election issue, regardless whether they're there or not. I mean, it's going to be tied to any Democrat, I think, especially those in Congress. So I think that's a moot issue if they're appearing next to each other.
It's also really important, I think, more so for Schauer than Peter. But I think this gave him a great opportunity to look like he was part of officialdom, like he had a role, like he played a make in terms of the propane thing. It made him look official. It was an opportunity to get on that stage that he hasn't had because he's not been in office for a while.
Well, and the other thing, too, though, is if you run away from this thing, then it makes it look like the president
is toxic. That's a whole separate story. You know, why is Mark Schauer afraid of the president?
And he shouldn't be afraid, Emily. It's not like he lost the state. Obama won the state overwhelmingly without even showing up.
I think this is a manufactured issue. I don't think that Dems are trying to run away from Obamacare particularly hard right now, with the possible exception of Jerry Cannon. I have no idea what's going on with that.
That's a different story altogether.
That's a different story altogether. But no, I don't think there's any reason that that they wouldn't have shown up other than the Republicans put out by press releases on it last week.
Well, look at the media attention that this event got. We had hordes of reporters who were, like, tracking Obama's car as it turned left onto a different street and tweeting that out. I mean, obviously, there's a lot of interest in the president still. There's a lot of people who are excited about this. Look at the crowd that showed up. So if you're a Democratic official running statewide, why would you not show up at this event? I mean, it just made for a nice little piece of rhetoric for the Republicans
to trot out. Especially for Mark Schauer, who could use some name ID, I think.
Governor Snyder was not at this event, Craig. He was over at the Detroit Economic Club, talking about Michigan's comeback. It appears, though, that he's not the only one talking about a comeback in general for their state.
No, we did some analysis last week and looked at how many governors are kind of painting their state story as a comeback. And Snyder, of course, is calling himself, I don't know if he's calling himself this, but his campaign is calling him the comeback kid. And we found that at least six governors use the phrase comeback to describe their state and their state of the state address. And then a whole bunch of other governors are talking about comebacks on the campaign trails they run for re-election this year.
And so that's interesting. So Michigan isn't necessarily unique with the comeback theme. It makes you wonder if there's been some polling or some type of focus groups that have been done to take a look at what keywords really work maybe with voters. Kind of like what the Democrats have done here with the middle class. You know, you're seeing the middle class being used all over the country. Comeback could be something that Snyder could use.
Yeah, it's really that timing piece. You know, a lot of these people took office in around 2010 when the economy was kind of bottoming out, and now it's starting to go back up as they're about to run for re-election. So the timing really plays into this narrative of a comeback, and who doesn't like a comeback story?
I love a comeback story. Yeah, comeback player of the year. Who was it last year? Can somebody tell me?
I have no idea.
I don't know. You're just getting into football. Don't worry. It'll happen.
Or baseball. Sure I don't even know what sport you were talking about.
Well, I don't know what sport I was talking about either. It's either baseball or football.
Yeah, so they only did that in NFL, right? Yeah.
Well, no, I think they do it in baseball too, don't they?
I'd have to vote for Connor Cook.
Connor Cook. Ooh, that's not bad.
All right. I agree with that.
The best story of the weekend was the Detroit Free Press's story with the escaped prisoner. I mean, how cool would that be? The prisoner who escapes gets one free telephone call, and he calls the paper, and you're the reporter who picks up the phone.
Well, I mean, that'd be interesting. I want to know how that happened, if that was the first thing on his mind. But, I mean, it's, you know, they had some great sound bites out of that, especially the fact that he said that it was relatively easy escaping from the prison.
You got to love that if you're the...
It wasn't all that hard.
That's some great advertising.
Yeah. Well, it's not like he just, you know, one day woke up and decided he was going to walk out. He said he'd been planning this for 2 months, right? And,
yeah. It sounds like it was a long time in the works, but he did say it was relatively easy, which makes you wonder, and it also makes me wonder, you know, if you escape from prison and you get one new phone call to call someone, you know, why are you calling a reporter? I don't know. What's the rationale?
You get your story out. And you can do a victory lap. I mean, take a look. I mean,
what's the victory lap?
Look what I did, you know?
Yeah, and then
I was trying to get to Arizona. I was trying to get to someplace warm.
He does realize that he's going back to prison now, and he's kind of like celebrating in the face of MDOC. This was easy.
Well, my theory is, you know, he's already been convicted for murder, so maybe his family's alienated, so I don't know why he would call. I don't know if he would want to call them, so I don't
know. He can talk to his family any old time. You know, you might as well take advantage when the spotlight's on you, you know? Why run away from it? Everybody's talking about this, right, Emily?
Yeah, I mean, I just, you know, reading this, it just sounds like his whole adventure ended in Indiana. I just, you know, I wish he would have done something fun while he was out. I mean, I would have
gone to Disney World or something?
I mean, I don't know.
What do you got against Indiana?
Craig, you have something to say to defend your home.
Yeah, really? There's got to be something fun in Indiana, right?
Yeah, there's a lot of fun things to do in Indiana. Come on, Emily. That's just ridiculous.
I mean, at least he hopefully had some fast food or something that he couldn't get in prison, so.
Well, but the cows are away. They're in the barn right now, so you...
Man, I'm not responding to that.
Talking about cow tipping, right? Join us now for the podcast, Samantha Harkins for the Michigan Municipal League. Samantha, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Kyle.
I am so excited that you're here for the MERS Monday podcast. This is such a great day.
I could not be more excited. This is fantastic.
All right, well, let's start with the governor's budget and the suggestion that municipalities could get a 15% revenue sharing increase. Excited, yes?
Qualified, excited, yes. I mean, we're obviously excited that now that there's more money in the budget, that the governor is wanting to invest back in communities. We've heard for a long time that, you know, there's no money to give back to us, and now that there is, this is certainly a statement that he's willing to reinvest in communities, and so we're pretty happy about that. Less happy about some of the new requirements for EVIP and EVIP in general. So that's my qualified happy.
What's wrong with the new EVIP requirements?
Well, let me start first with the old EVIP and just say that we EVIP was something the governor instituted back in 2011 when he came into office, and essentially, you know, our members have to meet certain criteria in order to get revenue sharing.
Statutory revenue sharing.
Correct. Statutory revenue sharing. And the challenge has been that it has not been administered extremely well by the Department of Treasury, and our members really view EVIP at this point as just busy work. And they're submitting information to Treasury in the same information multiple times in different forms, getting a lot of sort of, you know, Treasury calling them over and over again. It's become quite cumbersome for them and quite frustrating. So the current EVIP program, we'd really like to see a lot of changes in that program, because we think that has just become, instead of, you know, we've heard that the goal of EVIP was to incent local units of government to behave in a different way, and all this does is give us more busy work. So it's not actually changing behavior and making local units of government more efficient. And now on top of that, the governor has announced these sort of new EVIP requirements. So he has this gold standard, which was said to me this morning, it's like Willy Wonka's golden ticket. Like, if you get the golden ticket, you don't have to do EVIP.
That would be great, though.
It could be great. Part of the challenge is that there are a lot of communities who are hurting because of state disinvestment. The city of Flint is a great example. They've lost $55 million in state shared revenue. If they had that money, they could pay off their unfunded liability, they could pay off their deficit, and still have about $5 million left over. So when the state talks about the, I'm going to say the quote-unquote bad actors, and I hate that phrase, but there are a lot of communities who are really struggling because the state has chosen to take away revenue sharing.
Well, that was part of the new plan, though, right? So it's based on population, so it helps something like a city like Flint. And then if you're in the high crime area, high unemployment, you get an extra bonus. So that would help.
In theory, that sounds like it could be something that's helpful. So it was explained to me, this new revenue sharing program, in one way. When the governor explained it, the budget presentation, I thought, this is not at all what I thought this was. And when you read the budget bill, it does not, the language does not describe the program the governor described at the budget presentation. It's very complicated. And part of my concern is, first of all, who determines which one of these communities then qualify for this? Are we going to have Treasury now deciding? So you have to meet EVIP criteria, and then you have to meet the new criteria. So it's like EVIP on top of EVIP, and it's really just way more confusing. And so if you want to talk about, you know, ways to incent local units of government to be more efficient, to do things better, I think that's a conversation to have. But to keep the existing EVIP program, and then in order to get this new money, you have to first comply with EVIP and then meet these new criteria. I mean, it's just obscenely cumbersome. It's really very complicated.
But is there any cities who aren't meeting EVIP who are just out in the cold?
No. All the communities that were eligible back in 2011 have been meeting the requirements.
Okay.
Some of them have been, they'll submit something, for example, and they'll get a dozen calls from the Department of Treasury. And initially, when this program came into place, the governor said publicly, as did when we work with Treasury for training, we kept hearing, we don't want to be the EVIP police. If you submit this information, you're going to get the money. It's become the EVIP police. I mean, our members get calls over and over again from Treasury.
Well, it seems like, though, this is supposed to be making municipalities more accountable and more thrifty and running a better ship. Has that happened?
I would say that all EVIP has done is make our communities show things they were already doing. So like I said, if you want to incent them to behave differently, a dashboard doesn't incent them to be more fiscally responsible. Submitting consolidation plans when they were already doing those and would continue to do them because they have to, because they don't have the money not to share services, that's not incenting them to do it. They're doing it already. And so nothing about this program has incented them to change behavior. It's just making them tell the state what they're already doing.
Let's talk about local roads.
Sure.
This is going to be a big problem after the snow melts. What do you think the solution is?
Well, we think that as we talk about the surplus funds, and we've heard the state budget director publicly say there's, you know, a certain amount of one-time funds. I think some of the fiscal folks agree with that as well. I think that for us, the one-time funds should be going into roads. We've got to start reinvesting in our public infrastructure. And obviously the governor called for infrastructure improvements last year and increased funding in roads. It was noticeably absent. I mean, he mentioned it as something he thought was a priority, but it's not in his budget. And not only are we so far behind in fixing our roads and bridges, we're not even talking about creating a public transit system, which is critical. I mean, kids move to Chicago because it's a cool place to live. They want to take the train. We don't have that option here. We're not even talking about it.
You can take the Amtrak.
You can take the Amtrak. It takes like 7 hours. If you're talking about, you know, Detroit's the largest metro region in the country without public transit, we're missing the opportunity to attract and retain talented people here in Michigan because we're not investing in things they think are important, and transit is at the top of that list. We're not even talking about it.
So how much money should go into roads?
That's a good question. I mean, last year the governor was calling for $1.2 billion. I don't think that's nearly enough. I don't think you could really serious about the road and bridge problems that we have now and investing in a larger transportation system, I think that $2 billion would be a starting point. I mean, frankly, we'd probably even ask for more than that.
Wow, that's a lot of cash.
All right,
so let's talk about a ballot proposal in August. The personal property tax replacement revenue ballot proposal.
Correct.
Yes. So where is the MML on this?
I will say that obviously when personal property tax passed back in 2012, we had some concerns with the replacement mechanism in particular, and also with the amount. We had been calling for 100% reimbursement. And we ultimately went neutral on that proposal because it was tied to this August ballot initiative. We wanted to be able to make sure we had time to work on some of the issues.
And refresh my memory on what the August ballot proposal is.
It's a statewide Headley vote, and as the bills passed, a portion of the statewide use tax would go to reimburse for personal property tax, and that vote is needed to make that happen.
Okay, so we're just shuffling money around.
Essentially,
basically.
Yes. Okay. Essentially. But we're using the expired battery tax credits to reimburse for personal property tax, so it would be money that would be coming in. But we really had significant problems with this locally, what would be a locally levied special assessment. We didn't think it was legal, and we had some legal analysis that confirmed that. And so we've been working with the administration and all the stakeholders, the business groups. We've all been in the same room for about a year. Conversations have been going really, really well. And all I can say at this point is that I think that we are getting to a place where if conversations continue in the direction they're going, that we will be happier with the August vote. I mean, we continue to say we want 100% reimbursement and a more stable reimbursement mechanism. And if we can get there, we will be supportive of the August vote.
Because if this thing fails, then we just go back to collecting PPT. It'd just be business so as usual, right?
Correct. But I think that, you know, we understand the legislature's desire to eliminate personal property tax. And knowing that, even if this thing fails, I don't think it would be over still. And so how do we work together to find something that's really good public policy? And again, the conversations have been really positive. So I'm hopeful, you know, again, if we can get to 100% reimbursement and a more stable reimbursement mechanism, we would support the August 2014.
So are you talking about changing the language of what's going to be on the ballot, it sounds like? I just want to make sure.
Not necessarily what's on the ballot, and change the use tax bill that passed back in 2012, okay, and then, you know, hopefully change, get rid of that locally levied special assessment. That's something we're still pushing for because that has some significant legal problems.
What else is going on with the cities that you think needs to be highlighted that maybe the legislature hasn't gotten to?
Last October, we unveiled a proactive agenda, a legislative agenda, called the Partnership for Place to talk about really investing in communities. And one of my goals as a lobbyist for communities is to really educate legislators in, you know, I just mentioned transit and the importance of that. We lose half of our graduates, our college graduates in Michigan and other places. And 2/3 of those kids that leave are looking for where they want to live first and then looking for a job. And so kids are leaving Michigan because we don't have the kind of places that are attracting them. And so when we talk about business tax cuts and we talk about, you know, all the things that the legislature has talked about in the last couple of years, I think that the focus is really off. And I think that we really need to be focusing on creating places, and that places are economic drivers. There will be jobs, there will be economic opportunity, and that's really been missing. And so when we talk a bit again about transportation funding, we need to be talking about transit. That's not a, you know, transit something that's fluffy and it's super. I mean, that's a real economic driver. Economic opportunity around transit systems it just booms. And so we are missing opportunities. And as long as we continue to talk about the importance of cutting taxes, that's not what drives the economy. The places that are thriving are not.
We're going to have something up and down Woodward, aren't we?
Well, I hope so. I mean, passed the Regional Transit Authority, but it passed and it's just sort of.
I was going to say, is M1 Rail a good start, or is that just not enough?
I think it's a good start. I mean, obviously, we were really supportive of the RTA. I think we've got to start somewhere. I think that the problem is, you know, we pass it and then it just sort of languishes out there. We've got to talk about transit in a more real way. And we've got to talk about investing in communities and investing in our municipal finance system and really looking at communities not just as the people who plow the streets and provide public safety, which we do, and that's critical, but also as places that people want to live and places that, you know, will really thrive because of that.
What do you think of the new MERS Monday podcast song, Dirty Laundry, by Don Henley?
I think it's awesome. I love it.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. Good. We've been getting positive feedback on
this. Yeah, I love Don Henley. I mean, I'm a giant Eagles fan and solo career. I mean, you can't go wrong.
Man. All right. Well, we've got to have you more. We've got to have you here more often.
Anytime.
All right. Excellent. Samantha Harkins from the Michigan Municipal League. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Kyle.
All right, that's going to do it for this week's edition of MERS Monday. Thanks for Samantha for stopping by and the MERS crew. Also, special thanks to the Michigan Press Association for distributing the podcast far and wide. And I see there's a pan downstairs for, is there somebody bring some food? There's tinfoil, what is that?
My mom made me a cake.
No way!
Yeah, so she brought it this weekend, so I brought it to share with the staff here.
All right, well, I'll probably have some because Emily forgot to put my cheese and meat in the fridge over the weekend.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I know.
Wow.
Well, it was just a little soft, and you know me, I'll still try and eat it anyway.
No, please don't, Kyle.
Well, it's just cheese, right?
I don't want to be responsible for your eminent freeze porn today.
Well, those beef sticks are pretty, I mean, it's almost like jerky, isn't it? I mean, it should be okay.
No.
What?
That's where that works. That's where that works.
All right, well, if I call in sick on Tuesday, you guys will know why. Until next week, I'm Kyle Mullen. Take care.